Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's conference call. I'm Elizabeth Kerr with Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. Tax reform is a top priority for Congress this year, and Speaker Ryan laid out his game plan in a speech yesterday to the National Association of Manufacturers, and we received a lot of feedback from the network that there's a lot of interest in this topic. So joining us to discuss the various tax reform proposals and what those might mean for small businesses is Dr. Mark Mazur. Mark is one of the country's foremost experts on tax policy. He served for 27 years in the federal government, most recently as the Assistant Secretary for Tax Policy at the Treasury Department, and he's now the Robert C. Posen Director of the Urbans Brookings Tax Policy Center, which is a premier non-governmental organization conducting wide-ranging research on tax policy. Today's call is part of a series we're doing on tax reform. You may have joined us last month for a call with Douglas Holtz Eakin, and we anticipate more calls in July and August, so please watch your email for those. For those of you who are new to Business Forward, our programming, Business Forward organizes local roundtables and Washington fly-ins, conference calls like this one, webinars, and media trainings for more than 100,000 business leaders across the country. And at these briefings, entrepreneurs and investors and senior executives and small business owners get the chance to brief policymakers on issues that affect their businesses and talk about how Washington can work with businesses to better accelerate our economy. More than 550 senior administration officials, members of Congress, governors, and business leaders have participated in our programming. This is all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's most respected companies. Before we get started, I need to cover a few housekeeping items. First, I want to remind everyone that this call is on the record. That means that we are recording the call, and we will send that to you after the discussion today in a follow-up email. Please watch your email for that message. It will also include a follow-up survey. Finally, a big part of this call is a Q&A session, and we will. There's a couple ways that you can ask questions. You can either press 1 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be entered into the queue to ask your question live, or you can email us your question to info@businessfwd.org, and I'll just read that question aloud for you. So again, you can press 1 on your telephone keypad to ask your question live, or you can email us your question at info@businessfwd.org. When we call on you to ask a live question, or when you send us your question, please introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. So again, press 1 on your telephone keypad or email that question to us at info@businessfwd.org. With that, let's get started. Please welcome Mark Mazur from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center.
Thanks a lot, Liz, and good afternoon to everybody. I'm Mark Mazur, Director of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. Our mission is to provide objective, nonpartisan information analysis about a wide range of tax topics, including tax reform. And hopefully I'll be able to deliver on this mission today. But before I start, I just want to say how much I've enjoyed interacting with members of Business Forward over the past few years. I usually come away learning something new, and I always appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you all. So my topic today is tax reform, and the basic starting point is why do we need to do tax reform? What's the impetus for doing tax reform? And basically, many people acknowledge the U.S. system for taxing business income in particular is outdated. After the 1986 Tax Reform Act was enacted, the U.S. had a corporate income tax rate of 34%, and that put the United States on the lower end of corporate tax rates among our trading partners. At the time, the U.S. was a low-tax country. Since then, just about every country in the world has reduced their corporate income tax rates, leaving the U.S. as a high-tax outlier. And that's the situation today. But it's not just tax rates. The U.S. system for taxing business income has not kept pace with changing business practices, not kept pace with increased globalization, nor the proliferation of pass-through businesses. These are partnerships and limited liability companies and S-corporations and so on. And it's clearly not kept pace with increasingly aggressive tax planning. So, 3 decades after the 1986 Tax Reform Act, it makes plenty of sense to look back at the tax code and say, could we do better? And if so, how? one thing I want to do today is make clear a difference between tax reform and tax cuts. I also want to give a brief overview of the House Republican Leadership Tax Plan and the Trump administration tax outline. I want to discuss the prospects for tax reform and end up with a little bit of indication how reform might affect smaller businesses and even discuss a couple of reforms that probably would help small businesses navigate the tax code better. So first up, tax reform versus tax cuts. Tax reform efforts are intended to improve either the efficiency of the tax system, the equity of the tax system, or the simplicity of the tax system. Ideally, all three of these. The efficiency of the tax system is measured by the amount of economic distortions that's associated with raising a given amount of revenue. So right now, the tax system raises somewhere around $3.3 trillion a year. The economic distortions that are associated with that are a measure of the inefficiency of the tax system. And so reducing those distortions along the lines of what investments to make or how much to invest, how much to save, what types of industries to operate in, what types of entity forms to choose, all those distortions, distinctions impose some economic cost on the system. And ideally, you'd want to reduce those distortions to the maximum extent possible. Second, tax reform efforts are intended to increase the equity of the tax system, whether that's ensuring that similarly situated taxpayers are treated similarly, what economists call horizontal equity, or ensuring that tax liabilities are correlated with the ability of taxpayers to pay tax. And the idea there is to have a system where those who have a greater ability to pay tax actually do pay a larger share of their income as tax. And third, the tax reform efforts are intended to increase simplicity. We have a very complex world, just about an infinite number of possible transactions individuals and businesses can enter into. It's very hard to devise a tax system that covers all those possible scenarios. But the current tax system we have makes things even more complicated than they need to be. And so taking steps to make clear to taxpayers what their choices are, what the tax consequences of making a particular choice is, and ensuring that it's straightforward to comply with the tax code really can reduce the burden on taxpayers without having much or any appreciable effect on the revenues that are collected. So tax reform by itself can increase revenue raised over the current level, can raise about the same amount of revenue as the current current law, and that would be called revenue neutral tax reform, or can raise less revenue than the current system. But the idea is that you're improving on these dimensions of equity, efficiency, and simplicity. Tax cuts, on the other hand, aim to reduce revenue relative to the current tax system. And they can have positive or negative effects on efficiency, equity, and simplicity, but that's not the point. The point is to reduce the amount of revenue that's collected. And so the takeaway here is that tax cuts do not equal tax reform. Tax reform is harder than tax cuts because true reform generally means things like broadening the tax base in exchange for lowering rates, means that for some taxpayers to have lower tax payments, other taxpayers may see their tax payments increase. It's technically difficult to make those changes because there are a lot of moving parts, many interdependencies, but it can be done. And, you know, U.S. Congress did this in 1986. There have been several attempts since then, but they've all fallen short. Question is, can it be done this year? First point, tax reform is difficult technically, but it's even more difficult politically because reform usually involves shifting tax liabilities from some taxpayers to others, generally from, say, lower tax industries to higher tax industries higher tax industries to lower tax industries as you try to even out the tax burdens across industries, across different types of taxpayers. And so the opposition to tax reform is often more of a political than a technical issue. Those who suspect that their taxes may rise due to reform tend to be quite vocal. Those who suspect their taxes might fall tend to be less vocal, somewhat perhaps discouraged from raising their hands at, and saying, "Hey, my taxes are going to decrease," because they may be concerned that they could be next up on the chopping block. And this combination makes it hard for politicians to put together a coalition because opponents tend to organize better, tend to be more vocal. Opponents to reform tend to organize better and be more vocal. But this isn't a partisan issue. And so opposition tends to fall along, say, industry lines or geographic lines, but not political party lines. And that's what makes reform difficult if Congress wants to rely only on Republican members to enact it, because there aren't large margins of error in either the House or the Senate. There's probably 20-some more Republicans in the House and two additional Republicans in the Senate. And so the task of threading that needle is just quite difficult in a situation where you're relying just on the members of one party to do this. There are probably two main tax reform proposals that are out in the public domain right now. There's a House Republican tax plan and the Trump administration tax plan or tax outline that came out in April. The Tax Policy Center has a special part of its website called Features that contains a section called Preparing for the 2017 Tax Debate. And that has a lot of useful information on the various aspects of the tax proposals under consideration. It's something that we keep adding to as we learn more things about what is going on in the tax debate. And I guess a little plug, the website is taxpolicycenter.org. One thing that it has on our website, though, is a comparison of the House plan and the Trump administration plan to current law. And just to kind of run through really quickly, the plans, they have some parts in common. Both the House and the Trump administration plan would take the 7 individual income tax brackets and reduce that to 3. They would lower individual income tax rates, especially on higher income taxpayers. They would reduce tax rates on capital gains, reduce corporate tax rates substantially. In the House plan, it would be reduced from 35% to 20%. In the Trump administration plan, to 15%. Both proposals would establish a separate maximum tax rate on income from pass-through businesses. The House plan goes to full expensing for capital investments and eliminates the deduction for interest pay as it transforms the corporate income tax into a cash flow tax. And the House plan also imposes a border adjustment tax where the cost of imports is not allowed as a deduction and export sales don't count as revenues. The House leadership says their bill will be revenue neutral tax reform plan, but really doesn't specify all the items needed to offset the cost of the tax cuts that are in their proposal. So it's sort of a high-level outline with a lot of individual components specified, but not all the components. The Trump administration plan is even less specified than the House leadership plan. And the Trump administration seems to sometimes say that the plan will be revenue neutral, sometimes say that it'll be the biggest tax cut of all time. But in either case, the revenue-raising components are not very well specified in this plan. What the lack of detail on both plans means, though, is that a lot of work needs to be done to enact tax reform legislation this year. There are a lot of items on the congressional calendar, including some very difficult must-do legislation, like increasing the debt limit. So the prospects for tax reform are murky at best. It's not impossible to see tax reform enacted this year, and I know Speaker Ryan said that he wants to push it across the finish line in 2017, but it will be a really big lift, and we shouldn't underestimate the complexity of getting this tax reform package together and getting it enacted into law. It is possible that Congress will take an easier way out and enact tax cuts, maybe call them tax reform, but not really do all the heavy lifting needed to enact true reform. So I have to see how this all shakes out. On the subject of tax reform, I testified last week before the Senate Small Business and Entrepreneurship Committee on tax reform issues. And my full testimony is on the Tax Policy Center website. But just wanted to note a couple of things that I mentioned before the committee. One, that looking at reforming the business tax system will have implications for smaller businesses. Efforts to broaden the tax base and lower the corporate rate or lower individual rates will affect a wide range of smaller businesses. Not all those effects will be positive. And sometimes some taxpayers will look at the combination of proposed changes and see that there may be unintended consequences. Maybe the tax benefits that they have become accustomed to will be taken away and they will be replaced with other similarly sized benefits and their taxes will go up or some other changes. But there are a couple of reforms that I think make good sense for smaller businesses regardless of what actual form the tax reform effort takes. And I just want to mention two of them today. One would be increased limits on expensing. Under Section 179 of the tax code, smaller businesses get to write off a portion of their investment every year, sometimes all their investment every year if it's a small enough amount. Raising that threshold from its current level to something like $1 million a year would really help smaller businesses address a couple of issues. One, it makes the accounting for capital assets easier, no longer needing to maintain adjusted basis and depreciation records and so on. And it provides a little bit of a boost for smaller businesses to make capital investments that will help them grow and innovate and hopefully drive economic change. And then a second change would be increased access to cash accounting. And probably the simplest way to think about this is just to think of checkbook accounting, where smaller businesses, say those with gross receipts less than $10 million, X million dollars, would be able to use essentially just that cash accounting system. And as they grow in complexity and so on, then they can adopt accrual accounting where they need to account for assets, inventory, and the like. But this would, I think, provide a large amount of simplification to smaller businesses with not very large revenue costs associated with them. Anyway, let me stop there and open things up for Q&A. I guess just a couple of takeaways that I want to leave you with. One, tax cuts don't equal tax reform. Two, tax reform is hard and politically harder, even harder than it is technically. And then three, that there are specific policies that can be part of any reform effort that should appeal to both reformers and those who own and operate smaller businesses as well. So that's it. Happy to take some questions.
Great, thanks. We have a couple live questions ready to go.
Okay.
Just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 1 on your keypad, or you can email us your question at info@businesswd.org. And when I call on you to ask a question, please introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. Our first question comes from Michael Goldwyn. Michael, your line is open. Go ahead and ask your question. Michael, if you want to ask a question, just press 1 again and we'll come back to you. We're going to go with Andrew Green. Andrew, your line is open. Go ahead and ask a question. Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Andrew Green. I'm from the Green Group. We're in Hanover, Maryland. So I just have a question about a little more detail on border adjustment. In the House plan, Does the House plan, just as a clarifying question, does the House plan include an exemption for pass-through income like the Trump kind of bullet point plan does?
Not related to the border adjustment, but the House plan does have a lower top rate on pass-through income of, I believe, 25%.
25%. So I guess my question has there been any discussion on how the border adjustment applies to pass-through entities? Because my understanding is that a big economic argument behind the border adjustment involves a dramatic reduction of the corporate tax rate, but, and of course a corresponding improvement in currency. As well, but I think that the calculus would be very different with pass-through entities if they're also hit with the border adjustment. And I just haven't seen any discussion of whether or not the border adjustment would apply to pass-through entities or whether pass-through entities would be exempted from that.
No, that's a really good question. I think the House plan has at its heart a shift from a corporate income tax to a destination-based cash flow tax, kind of an odd form of a consumption tax. And as part of that, there is this border adjustment tax component, which denies a deduction for imports and doesn't count revenues from exports as gross receipts. There are a number of open issues as to how this will actually operate in practice, and you've happened onto one of them. What would the effect on pass-through businesses be? And this would go from sole proprietorships to partnerships to limited liability companies, test corporations, would they get the exact same treatment that regular traditional C corporate taxpayers would get? I think it's an open issue at the moment. I mean, other open issues on the border adjustment tax component are how are financial transactions handled? Things like insurance, reinsurance, other types of financial transactions are, it's not clear how those would be handled. Another big open area are things like cross-border trade and services and in particular in digital services. How would those be subject to tax or subject to the border adjustment component if they were sold directly to individual taxpayers? So there's a whole bunch of open issues as to how this actually would apply in practice, and I think that's part of why I think the future of tax reform is a bit murky, because we have a proposal that's out there with some amount of detail and some set of concepts that seem to work at a high level of abstraction, but once you get down into the details, Every one of these details is going to matter a lot, and they'll take time to work through and take probably even longer to get right. And so that just means the clock is ticking on getting tax reform done this year. And as I said earlier, I think it'll be a pretty big lift.
Thanks. We have an emailed question from Linda Long from New York. She says, you talked a lot about reform versus cuts. If Congress only passes tax cuts this year, will that make it more different to do reform later on?
No, I don't think it would make it more difficult to do reform later on. I think doing reform is difficult at any time. I just think that it may make it a little bit harder in the sense that if you were looking at the nation's fiscal situation going out into the medium and long term, we're looking at a situation where the federal budget deficit today, which is on the order of $550 billion a year, will grow as a share of GDP, will grow from like less than 3% to more than 5% by the late 2020s and grows further out in the future as baby boomers retire and so on. And one of the consequences, I think, of that is having tax cuts exacerbates that problem, and that it may make it more difficult to get to reform once the appetite for having tax cuts has been satiated. But as a technical matter, I don't think it's more difficult. I think just as a political or practical matter, it may be.
On the politics, what is your judgment of what the political reality of being able to pass real reform looks like? We've seen a lot on the far right that's different from maybe Speaker Ryan's plan. Do you think that there are Democrats that will be interested in supporting one of the packages that comes forward?
So that's a very good question on the politics, and it's a little hard to say right now because it looks like in both the House and the Senate and from the administration that the decision is made to go ahead with just Republican votes on this. As I said earlier, the margin of error there is pretty small, just 20-some members in the House and 2 members in the Senate. And so it makes it difficult to see how you can come up with a true reform package that has lots of difficult trade-offs and doesn't lose more than that small number of votes. Is it possible to get Democrats on board? I suppose it's possible, but there's been just about no effort so far to hold hearings, do true bipartisan work on even some of the principles of reform. And so that makes it just a little harder to see how that will come together in a bipartisan way.
Great, thank you. Our next question is from Stan Martinez from Carson, Nevada, and he's asking, how does tax reform fit in with Obamacare repeal and the budget?
So it's a little bit of a difficult question because the way the Congress is acting to date has been to use what is called the budget reconciliation process as a way to get controversial legislation that has a major fiscal component through with only a majority of Senate voting on this. So for the Affordable Care Act repeal proposal, we have a situation where the Senate is developing their bill and hopes to unveil it later this week and maybe have a vote next week on this. And the idea would be to use the fiscal year 2017 budget reconciliation package as a way to get this enacted into law. However, the repeal of the Affordable Care Act effort is largely a tax cut. There are a number of taxes on insurers, branded prescription drugs, medical devices, but also on investment income of high-income individuals that would be repealed as part of the effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And they would, in the House, largely be paid for with Medicaid cuts. Getting that part done first then makes the second step of enacting tax reform possible using the fiscal year 2018 budget reconciliation process. And so they're stacked up in this particular order because that's the way the congressional leadership wanted to proceed. I think they thought it would go faster than it has to date. For the tax reform plan to be enacted using the budget reconciliation procedures for fiscal year 2018, one thing that would be advantageous to having the Affordable Care Act stuff done first, repealed on first, is that the revenue baseline will be about $1 trillion over 10 years lower than it would otherwise be. And so it may make it easier to do something that is revenue neutral against that smaller revenue baseline.
We have a live question now from Bonita Webster. Bonita, your line should be open. Go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to ask the question. I'm from Zionsville, Indiana. I have a small business called Indy Medical Supplies. And I want to know what the tax reforms will do for disadvantaged women and minority-owned businesses, particularly in the medical field, that deal with the problems of the underserved in the Medicaid arena.
Thanks, Benita, for the question. I think by itself, the tax reform efforts don't focus on any particular line of business. And so women-owned or minority-owned or other disadvantaged groups of owners are not, I don't think, going to be singled out in tax reform for any particular treatment. I think the goal of doing tax reform would be to have the overall system become more efficient, simpler, and more equitable. So a true reform would probably make the process of you filing and complying with your tax responsibilities easier, but that would occur for all types of smaller businesses, regardless of ownership pattern.
Thanks. We have another question, an emailed question from Joseph Howell in Evanston, Illinois, and he wrote, you spoke a little bit about changes in the tax code that for internet companies. The last time tax reform was done, the internet wasn't publicly available yet. How might tax reform affect internet-based businesses?
Well, thanks. Thanks for that question. It's a really good question. I think the part of what I tried to do in setting the stage for why we need to do tax reform is that the current U.S. tax system was created essentially in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and with the last reform in 1986, well before lots of current business activities and business practices were in place. And so needs to be updated to address that. One example is on digital services and digital transactions that current tax law has a very difficult time dealing with income earned from digital transactions, especially those that occur across borders. And so if you just think of downloading a new version of Windows or buying an iPhone and having the operating system installed, there's value added in that process. And it's not really clear to tax authorities where the income that's associated with all those activities is really generated. And it shows itself largely in multinational firm situations where you have many cross-border transactions, and from the standpoint of the taxpayers, they would like to have the large amount of income attributed to lower tax jurisdictions. From the standpoint of taxing authorities, they'd prefer probably the opposite. And we're seeing a lot of situations in, for example, Europe, where revenue authorities in France or Italy or Germany are looking around and saying that many well-known companies look like they have large operations in their country and are paying very minimal amounts of tax and are calling into question the business practices that got to that place. And that's just another reason why the U.S. really needs to reform its tax systems, just to adapt to current business practices and the increasingly globalized economy.
Thanks. We have time for just a couple more questions. This is another emailed question from David Ferris in Toledo, Ohio. And he's asking, do you anticipate any personal tax reform will happen, or will it just be corporate tax reform, and how might those two be linked?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and I agree that my remarks are mostly on the business side of the ledger. Both the House Republican plan and the Trump administration plan have significant tax changes on the individual income tax side as well. In addition to smaller number of brackets, generally lower tax rates, they would have larger standard deductions, getting rid of some number of itemized deductions. I think both have said that they would retain itemized deductions for mortgage interest and charitable contributions, but would repeal other types of itemized deductions, for instance, state and local tax deduction. And so there would be large reforms on the individual side under both of these plans. And I think the difficult part here is just to sort of game out how these reforms would shake out, because at this point we're seeing a lot of the a lot more description on the tax cut side of things than on the provisions that would offset the revenue costs or essentially pay for those tax cuts. One of my colleagues here likens it to bringing out a menu and showing you just the desserts, but really not showing you the vegetables that you have to eat as well.
I think we have a follow-up question from Andrew Green. Andrew, your line's open. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you know, so obviously the border adjustment is something I'm quite obsessed with. You know, something that I don't hear brought up, and I'm kind of curious of your views on this, is that I understand that an important kind of component the economists and the Republicans are arguing for the border adjustment is that it would cause the value of U.S. currency to rise 20% to 25%, which would make imports cheaper. So that would effectively offset the border adjustment. At least that's my understanding of the argument. But wouldn't at the same time that be devastating to companies that manufacture here and try to export overseas, because it makes the cost of our products more effective, more expensive? And if that's the case, who on earth is going to support this thing?
So this is one of the again, you raise a good point. This is one of the difficult parts of how the border adjustment provision would work in practice. I think the economists who propose ideas like this and promote it will say that essentially this will act like a form of a value-added tax, and that it will tax consumption in the United States, not tax exports from the U.S. that are consumed abroad. And the result of the change in trade flows will push to move the exchange rates in a way that almost exactly offsets the effect of increased incentives to export and decreased incentives to import. One of the issues that economists and policymakers and just policy observers have been debating is whether these currency adjustments will actually occur or not, and if so, how fast they'll occur. It's an open issue at this point. I think there are many theoretically appealing models for how these currency adjustments will occur, but none of these economists are actually currency traders, and so they may be missing some important parts on the way the markets for currencies actually operate.
Great. Thank you. That is all the time that we have for today. Thank you, Mark Mazur, for joining us and for your really in-depth overview. I think it's been really helpful for everybody on the line. Thanks to all of you as well for taking time out of your schedule to join us. I just want to remind you that you will receive an email with a follow-up survey and a recording of the call. And if you weren't already, you're registered to receive our event invitation. So please watch your email for our next tax policy call, as well as our other events. Thanks again. We'll talk to you all soon. Bye.